Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Freedom Works. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. I'm Paul Molloy. So glad you're with us. And in just a moment, we're going to be joined by Hans Bader of the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute. Hans is with us to talk about Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan and some additional information on her as she sits down this morning to begin the process of questioning before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Also, the Supreme Court is going to be ruling today, apparently, on Sarbanes-Oxley and gun rights. We may get Hans to talk a little bit about that as well. And we're going to talk about Robert Byrd, who passed away this morning at the age of 92, and his impact, his huge impact, on both the Congress and the shape of politics over the years. Even now, after his death, he is impacting the legislative process, and we will talk about that as well. Meantime, this is Tampa Bay's only ongoing regular libertarian radio show, Freedom Works. We are here to champion the concept of less federal government in your life, not more, but more importantly, more personal freedom and personal responsibility, which belongs to you. So we are so glad you're with us. And we come to you Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Network. We are also available worldwide from our website, thefreedomworks.com, thefreedomworks.com. And please go there to find out more about the program and libertarianism and all kinds of things. If you want to call us, we have our toll-free number for you, 866-826-1340, 866-826-1340. And finally, if you tend to like to write instead of talk, we've got an email address, freedomworksemail@yahoo.com. Well, we're delighted to have Hans Bader with us, and he's a busy man this morning because all kinds of things are popping at the Supreme Court. But Hans is the counsel for special projects at the Great Competitive Enterprise Institute, and we've brought him on to talk about Elena Kagan and some things that you may not know about her as she begins the process of questioning for her nomination to the Supreme Court. Hans, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thank you.
All right. It's always our pleasure to have you. Hans, I've had you on many times, and you always we always come away with more information, so it's always great to have you. Well, so Elena Kagan is sitting down finally, starting today, to begin the process of questioning before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And you've found some additional things on Elena Kagan that you thought might be appropriate that we talk about. And so I thought I'd just have you start talking a little bit about some of those things. So what do you have to tell us?
Well, Kagan was instrumental in getting President Clinton to veto a ban on partial birth abortion. Right now, there are five justices who are generally speaking pro-choice, but one of them, Justice Kennedy, is willing to uphold restrictions on late-term partial birth abortions. So it suggests that Kagan could potentially, you know, with another justice being replaced, override the Supreme Court's decision allowing a narrowly crafted restriction on partial birth abortion in its ruling a couple years
ago.
Kagan also lumped together the NRA and KKK as, quote, bad guy, unquote, organizations while serving in the Clinton White House. She plainly does not like the National Rifle Association and is not a big fan of gun rights generally. Again, that was a long time ago. We have no idea what she's going to say or regarding the Second Amendment in her testimony
yeah.
to Congress.
And
but she certainly was not a fan of the NRA in the past.
Yeah, labeling the National Rifle Association as bad guy, as a bad guy organization, does, I would think something like that is going to be brought up, hopefully will be brought up so that she can explain it. And going back to the partial birth abortion situation, now she has not spoken publicly about the 1973 Roe versus Wade decision, which legalized abortion nationwide, correct?
Right. And that's not really in play, because right now you have a minimum of five justices, probably more, who would be willing to accept the broad holding of, you know, Roe versus Wade under stare decisis. But the question is at the more at the margins. You know, does Roe versus Wade have limits? You know, can the government pass a ban on partial birth abortion? That is something that has more closely divided the court. They struck down in Nebraska partial birth abortion in 2000. but then they upheld a federal restriction on partial birth abortion a few years later, after Justice O'Connor retired from the court and was replaced with, I guess it was, replaced with Chief Justice Roberts. They upheld a slightly more narrowly crafted federal law restricting partial birth abortion. So she's someone who takes an extremely expansive view of Roe versus Wade, not someone who views the trimester framework as really letting the government regulate in the third trimester.
Tell us, for those of us that don't know, what does stare decisis actually mean?
It means that whether a Supreme Court ruling was correctly or incorrectly decided, the later courts will adhere to it, out of respect for precedent. And, you know, sometimes you'll see justices say, you know, I would not have decided the case the same way, but I'm willing to accept it under that principle. The idea being that we don't want, we want certainty in the law. Mm-hmm. And if you're, the Supreme Court is constantly questioning its own past precedents, you don't get that certainty.
One of the things, by the way, again, we're speaking with Hans Bader from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Hans is the senior attorney there and the counsel for special projects. We know for sure that one of the things that they're going to ask her about, when she was the dean of the Harvard Law School, she did not permit the ROTC organization to recruit. And
right. She didn't permit the military to recruit because of the fact that they did not... the fact that gay men and lesbians were not permitted to serve. And the irony of that is, of course, it's Congress that enshrined the don't ask, don't tell provisions into law. It's not the military. She had no problem going to work for Clinton, who accepted don't ask, don't tell, you know, who signed DOMA, mm-hmm. any of the other bills that now are very much decried by gay rights groups.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, she had a problem with the military itself and, you know, would not allow the military to recruit on campus, even though there was a federal law called the Solomon Amendment that required recipients of federal funds, like Harvard Law School, to allow military recruiters to participate equally with other prospective recruiters
mm-hmm.
on campuses. So basically, she violated the Solomon Amendment, kept the military off Harvard Law School, even though other institutions, which were far more oppressive, were treated favorably by Harvard Law School. For example, you know, if you're in Saudi Arabia, you know, being gay can be effectively a death sentence.
Right.
But, you know, while I was at Harvard Law School, they accepted a big grant from the, from the Saudis, and they've continued to accept more money from Saudis and created programs with Saudi money at Harvard Law School. So they don't have a problem with foreign governments that kill gay people. Kagan didn't have a problem working for a president who signed laws that are now generally viewed as being discriminatory towards gay people. But she did have a problem with the U.S. military recruiting at Harvard Law School, which strikes me as a little bit odd. You know, it strikes me as straining at a gnat while swallowing a camel. But I guess maybe she'll have the chance to explain that in her testimony.
Yeah, and she's been one that's criticized the process of these Senate judiciary hearings for nominees because she's found them to be somewhat vacuous.
She said in the past, in her writings in law journals, not that there's that much she's written in law journals, she's actually published quite little, but she said in the past that nominees should have to be disclosed more about their judicial philosophy than has been the case with the last, with most prior judicial nominations. But I don't expect her to live up to her own words when she appears before the Senate. You know, I expect her to have a, you know, confirmation conversion and argue that she can't divulge her views on these issues because it would somehow tip her hand or bias her in her rulings on the court.
Right. By the way, I've got some breaking news for you, Hans. Just crossing the wire. The Supreme Court has extended gun rights to all 50 states. And
That's certainly something. I've argued that's certainly a logical thing to do because if it's a fundamental enough right, they're characterized as a fundamental right, and usually you extend those against the states. The only rights in the Bill of Rights they have not extended against the states, as opposed to the federal government, are ones that are deemed to be, frankly, pretty trivial, like the right to a civil jury trial in a case where you have, $100 in controversy for small claims. Jury trial, the Seventh Amendment jury trial provision has been held not to extend to the states, but virtually all other provisions of the Bill of Rights, or the vast majority of them, have been treated as not only applying against the federal government, but also the states. So it's only logical that the Supreme Court would reach the same conclusion regarding gun rights, which people at the time of the founding, like Justice Story, perceived as being very important.
Sure. Yeah, in fact, I can give you a little bit of information on this if you'd like me to. It says here, in its second major ruling on gun rights in 3 years, the court has extended the federally protected right to keep and bear arms to all 50 states. This will be hailed by gun rights advocates and comes over the opposition of gun control groups, including the city of Chicago. This was a 5-4 ruling, Hans, so the usual suspects here. Samuel Alito wrote for the majority. He said that the right to keep and bear arms must be regarded as a substantive guarantee, not a prohibition that could be ignored so long as the states legislated in an overhanded manner, unquote. So are you surprised, or did you figure that this would be the ruling?
I figure this would be the ruling. I figure that they would find that it applied against the states, but they would also leave open the possibility of some gun controls. In spite of that they would not treat the Second Amendment right as absolute, the way they suggested they would not in dictum in their prior ruling, finding mm-hmm. that the Second Amendment was applicable against the federal government.
Now, does this mean that places like the city of Chicago and other major cities, and Washington, D.C., which also, of course, was one of the reasons that this eventually got to the Supreme Court because of the ban there, too, do you think that this means that these cities are going to have to allow guns?
Well, they're going to try and permit them under as narrow circumstances as possible and see if they're going to fight a war of attrition against gun owners to try and make it as difficult as possible to have a gun. You know, they're going to require you to take costly gun safety classes. They're going to require you to pay substantial fees to register your gun, you know, and they're not going to make it easy. You're going to really, unless you really want a gun, you're probably not going to get one even after this decision.
You think so? They're going
to
make
the Supreme Court has just sketched the right to keep and bear arms in very, very, you know, the very, very broad outline of the right. It hasn't answered many questions about how far it reaches.
I see.
And
so
the fact that you strike down the Washington blanket gun ban and the fact that you rule against Chicago doesn't mean that, and these are sort of extreme outlier governments in terms of how much they restrict guns. There are a lot of less extreme restrictions on guns that are still very much in play. And, you know, a lot of them at the end of the day that the Supreme Court would probably uphold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the question of how far you can go to take away guns from people who are either convicted or accused of crimes, you know, whether you can take it away only from felons versus misdemeanants, and the courts will probably allow them to take away, you know, guns not only from people who are convicted of crimes, even pretty minor crimes, but also people who are subject to various civil restrictions, like in restraining order cases. And then there's also the scope of, you know, how onerous registration requirements can be. So there's an awful lot of unanswered questions for gun rights. I mean, there'll still be a lot of fodder for political campaigns.
I would think that this is going to be very hard, though, for cities to get around. I mean, this is the second ruling by the Supreme Court that pretty much says that you have the right to bear to own guns, to own a handgun. I mean, even in Chicago, wouldn't you think that if they tried to stop people, for instance, from owning guns in their homes or carrying guns in their cars or, you know what I mean, or coming into the city and having a gun from another place where it's okay, don't you?
Right. I mean, there are a lot of these jurisdictional problems. You know, you're traveling and you have a gun and you end up being funneled into a state which has, you know, your plane is diverted or something like that, and you end up being funneled into a state that has very strict gun laws, like you're in New Jersey or New York or Massachusetts or something, and you become an instant criminal.
Yes.
So there's still an awful lot of questions.
I guess there is.
There are also questions about whether, you know, often when you have a fundamental right at stake, you have to have greater notice mm-hmm. than you would otherwise, you know, in terms of being prohibited from engaging in the activity, like in free speech. Often, even when the government can restrict the speech, you're required to know that the restriction or know that your speech is in fact prohibited. So the question becomes, in these ambiguous gun laws, even if the government has the ability to regulate guns, does it have to make it very clear and explicit exactly who can, you know, who can't have a gun, you know, the circumstances under which you can't have it, and whether you need to show scienter or, you know, proof of guilty knowledge before somebody's convicted.
Sure.
So there are an awful lot of open questions, even after the ruling in McDonald versus Chicago.
Well, we were speaking, of course, about Elena Kagan, and I notice here that she's got a little bit of background, perhaps, that says here regarding gun rights. She had written a memo while she worked for Thurgood Marshall, the first black that was selected to the Supreme Court, and she wrote a memo in which she called on him not to hear a man's appeal of his conviction for having an unlicensed gun. The defendant's sole contention is that the District of Columbia's firearm statute violate his constitutional right to keep and bear arms. She wrote, "I'm not sympathetic." But during her confirmation as Solicitor General, she told senators that there is, quote, no question, unquote, that the Second Amendment guarantees individuals the right to keep and bear arms. She also said that that right, like others in the Constitution, provides strong, though not unlimited, protection against government regulation. So she's kind of, she won't be a strong advocate of anti-gun laws, it sounds like, there.
Well, I mean,
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I kind of doubt it, though. I think she'll try and winnow away at the right every opportunity she has.
Okay.
I mean, she realizes she has to say this, that if she says anything negative about gun rights, she will create a huge headache for the red state Democrats who want to vote for her but don't want to antagonize their constituents.
Yeah.
So she knows that's sort of the third rail. But, you know, I think she's someone who sees judging as being very political. I mean, her mentor, Justice Marshall, he said, "You do what you think is right, and then you let the law catch up to you," which is a very, very elegant way of putting judicial activism.
Yes, it is. That's just the first thing I thought about. So all in all, summing up, Hans, as she goes through this process, do you think she's going to run into any problems, or do you think she's pretty much going to glide through and be selected?
You know, I think she'll probably glide through because of the fact that there's been so much news to distract attention from her nomination. She's been really lucky to have all these competing news controversies. She's got this massive oil spill. She's got the financial crisis, you know, the world recession. She has all these political dogfights in Washington. And these have all taken an enormous amount of oxygen out of the fight over her nomination.
And now,
so I think she'll go through. You know, she may not actually get that many, a high number of votes, historically speaking, for her confirmation, but that'll be on the final vote. I don't think they'll filibuster her. The key question is whether she gets filibustered, because if she's not filibustered by the Republicans, then she doesn't need 60 votes to get confirmed. She only needs 51, and she'll easily get 51.
You know, interestingly enough, with the death of Senator Robert Byrd this morning, who was a great constitutional expert, but a Democratic vote in the Senate.
Right.
And here's one more a big piece of news, I guess, on the day that she's going to start the process that may take away from it. But despite all of that, you don't think that there's going to be a problem? There's not going to be a filibuster, or do you feel there might be some things that pop up in her background that that possibly could give her some trouble?
I mean, if there's some new revelation coming out could cause her problems. You know, there's always the possibility of that. But right now, she looks on track to get confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that the vast majority of Republicans will vote against her on, you know, the final vote, but they won't filibuster her. I mean, part of it,
sure,
they're figuring, if we filibuster, who else are we going to get in place of her? Who else is going to, you know, Obama's just going to nominate somebody else who's probably a very similar ideological stripe.
Right.
What really does it achieve to block her nomination when the Democrats have 59 votes in the Senate? And on social issues, as opposed to some other issues, they probably still have a filibuster-proof majority. I mean, the main senators are, you know, on social issues usually go with the Democrats, mm-hmm, and sometimes Senator Brown does too. So
Senator Brown,
pretty liberal, right? Scott Brown. I mean, he's more conservative than
the new senator from Massachusetts.
Right. But I mean, mm-hmm, the Democrats start out basically with 59 votes, and unless Kagan does something really stupid, like she suddenly divulges how much she hates guns, you know, or there's some new revelation coming out about her, I think she'll get confirmed fairly easily.
So there wouldn't be.
She won't get most of the Republican votes. I mean,
right,
the vast majority of Republicans will vote against her, but she doesn't need their votes. She just needs to prevent the Republicans plus one Democrat prevent them from filibustering her.
Sure.
So as long as she doesn't get filibustered, she only needs 51 votes, and she's very likely to get over 60.
The Republicans wouldn't pull a trick like blocking her, knowing that the November elections are coming up and they might recapture control of the Senate. And then,
that is a consideration. But even after November, you know, they're not going to get a majority in the Senate.
You don't think so?
No. And then in addition, you know, you're still going to have these the folks like the senators from Maine are still going to be willing to confirm somebody that they perceive as being liberal as opposed to radical.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. And, you know, Senator Graham of South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, he tends to go along as long as Obama doesn't nominate somebody particularly radical.
Although he did have some things to say about her on the Sunday talk show.
It is still conceivable that he would vote against
her. Yeah, he wants to hear more about her.
I don't think he will. I think he'll probably vote in favor of her. But it's conceivable he'll vote against her. But he's not going to filibuster her.
Right, right. Well, again, I want to thank you very much, Hans. I know that you wanted to get away, and we promised we'd let you go after some time so you could. So thank you for coming on this morning, Hans Bader from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And people want to find out more about you, et cetera, just go to CEI.org.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, our pleasure. Hans, good luck, and we'll talk with you soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All righty. Hans Bader, my friends. We're going to take our short break here. We come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Robert Byrd, his passing, and what he meant to our country.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Eagle Tires has used radial steel-belted tires from $20. Eagle Tires' new radials are the lowest priced in Tampa Bay, period. If you need tires, save big on Eagle Tires, now with three locations open every day. In Tampa, at 3816 North Nebraska, open 24 hours a day, 813-221-7660. In St. Petersburg, 3179 22nd Avenue North, Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 24 hours a day, Sunday, 9 to 4. That's 727-498-8921. And in St. Petersburg, 1700 9th Street South, Monday through Saturday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., Sunday, 9 to 4. 727-827-2937. No one beats the prices at Eagle Tires.
Hey, we're glad you're listening to Freedom Works. And if you like what you're hearing, there's something you can do to help keep us on the air. You can visit our website at thefreedomworks.com and make a contribution, anything from $20 on up, and it'll go directly to our program and our efforts to get out the libertarian message of less government in our lives and more personal freedom and responsibility. And while you're there at the website, you can find out more about libertarianism. You can also take a very short quiz to see where you fit in on the political spectrum. And you can find out more about people that have stood for libertarian principles like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand. But please consider backing our show with a contribution. We even make it easy for you with a credit or debit card. And once again, that's thefreedomworks.com. And by the way, thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Stu White.
And I'm Jim Grady. Join Stu and I for the Maximum Motoring Radio Show.
Well, we've had a lot of great guests in the past. David E. Davis, former editor from Car and Driver Magazine.
Founder of Automobile Magazine.
Automobile Magazine. Bob Lutz, vice chairman of GM.
Wayne Carini from Chasing Classic Cars.
And we just have a good old time here.
Car guys talking about cars.
Yeah. Join Jim and Stu for the Maximum Motoring Show now on Thursday afternoons at 3 on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Tampa Bay's Tan Talk. Entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. I am Paul Malloy. Thank you so very much for being with us this morning. Gee, a lot happening in Washington. We've got Robert Byrd passing away at the age of 92. We have the Supreme Court ruling on the Second Amendment. We've got Elena Kagan sitting down to be questioned by the Senate Judiciary Committee and her process for Supreme Court. But most importantly, we got Big Ed back. Big Ed has returned from his whole trip to, I think it was St. Croix in the Virgin Islands. And when he left us, he was a happy bachelor, and he returns as a married husband. So congratulations, Ed. And how does it feel? Do you feel any different today than you did when I last saw you?
No. A little lighter in the wallet, but I heard that goes with the territory.
Yeah. So everything go well, and nice wedding ceremony.
Everything was nice. It rained a little down there because there was a tropical wave going through, but it kept things kind of cool. The airlines kind of didn't want to let us come home, which has a good kind of a good thing, but a bad thing. And
you stayed an extra day.
Well, no, we had to stay in Puerto Rico overnight in a room that was about as big as this studio.
Oh.
Yeah. And very cold, and you can probably tell in my voice I have a cold. It was probably about 62 degrees in the room, and couldn't shut the air off.
Oh, that is cold. So, gosh, yeah, that is cold.
I can't believe it. So.
Now, the wedding took place on the island of St. Croix?
Yeah. It was a nice resort.
Resort.
Carambola Beach, and it was fantastic. Everything worked out great.
So you enjoyed it, and
yep.
Now may we ask the name of your wonderful bride, your first name?
Jonna.
Jonna.
Yeah.
Well, Jonna, if you're listening, congratulations, Jonna. We'll try and keep Big Ed in check here as long as we can. You know, as long as he's a married man now, because the rules change a little bit. Ed, you know, when you're married.
Well, and I'm sure you'll bring it up later, but I had a little. Disagreement with you coming back here because I left, you know, when I left you, I left you and the Rays with a 2-game lead over the Yankees.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
And I come back and it's evaporated. So I'm pinning that one on you. Not you, BJ Upton. I'm pinning it on you.
I don't blame you. You're right, because I promised you I'd hold the lead. I'd hold the lead while you were gone, and I did not do my duty. And I was watching that game yesterday, and I must say, I was a little bit surprised. And let me also say that this is not the only situation where there's been some dugout altercation. I happen to be a Chicago White Sox fan, as well as a Rays fan coming from Chicago. And they were playing the Cubs, and you know about this Carlos Zambrano incident. He's the pitcher for the Cubs, and he literally attacked some players in the dugout because he was upset they were not. Well, he didn't physically hit them, but right. They had to restrain him as well. So now, what happened here with B.J. Upton and Evan Longoria? Why were they arguing? Do you think?
Well, there was a hit in the gap, and B.J. just kind of jogged to it, you know, and it turned in from a double, it went to a triple. And, it's not something that, well, they had to review and say, well, yeah, he is kind of jogging. You know, as soon as it happened, the announcer for the race said, and BJ is just jogging. You know, and I think the competitor that Evan is when they got in the dugout, he walked past him and said something like, you know, I probably can't use it on the air, but... uncertain terms said, move your behind.
Yeah.
And then
you
got to
hustle after that kind of thing.
And then BJ, and then turned around, and then words start flying. It was quite a few four-letter words dropped, and BJ had to be restrained. He was embarrassed because his family was there, more or less anything, you know. But
well, why would I guess the question, because he did look like he was hot dogging it. Why would BJ's normally a hustler?
No, he's not. There's been problems with him.
There has been.
Yeah.
I see. Okay,
this isn't the first time.
Okay,
he's been sat down and suspended for it. So
okay, I stand corrected. I wonder what would prompt him not to hustle when he knows that guy goes to third at least. Do you think he thought? Because I watched the play, and maybe he thought, you know what? No matter how hard I get this ball, he's still going to make it to third. Runner could fall down or something.
Sure. But you got to remember, too, BJ didn't get what he wanted in the offseason. So I think that plays into it, too. And Carl Crawford was not in right field. And I think BJ was kind of feeling like, well, if Carl was there, he would have got it. But I had to lumber my butt over and get it.
Okay.
So, you know, so little things. But as soon as I saw that, I said, can you run a little faster? And just as I said that, McGrain said, you know, BJ just jogging over there. What's going on? And it turned into a triple, and it was kind of moot because, you know, six pitches later, the guy hit a 2-run homer.
Yeah,
but still,
he could have singled.
Still, but if they all did that, they'd be losing a lot more games,
of course.
I think they're going to cut the fat here. Don't be surprised if something happens here.
Wow. Well, interesting situation. Anyway, congratulations.
Thank you.
Big Ed, I'm so happy that you're back, my friend, safe and sound. Well, as promised, Robert Byrd, he was the longest-serving human being in the Senate. He died at the age of 92 this morning. He was called the Prince of Pork because he was able to bring more legislative money or taxpayer money, just more money to the state of West Virginia. There was about 80 buildings named after him. There are probably more buildings named after him in West Virginia than are named after the McDonald's brothers for hamburgers. That's how many buildings they've got there for him. He at one time was a member of the Ku Klux Klan, interestingly enough, and actually became a Democrat, I think, back in the 40s. But he was also known as the expert on the Constitution, which is an interesting development because we've got so many people now talking about whether or not we're tending to ignore the Constitution. Byrd was always one. He always kept the Constitution with him in his pocket and always was the one that people would turn to, also not only for the Constitution, but for the rules, the actual rules of the Senate, the what the, you know, what people would call the rules of order of the Senate. Many things about him. One of the things that may occur now that he's passed on is that his death may imperil this finance reform bill that the Democrats are trying to pass. It decreases the chances of the Senate being able to block a filibuster by Republicans on this financial regulatory reform bill. The Republicans do not want the bill, and the Democrats have a razor-thin margin right now. They may not get the 60 votes that would fend off a Republican filibuster. So in the meantime, they're going to have to fill in the position for Robert Byrd. It'll be interesting to see who they will nominate to fill Robert Byrd's position. I don't know what the rules are of West Virginia, but typically the governor of the state will temporarily fill the spot, and then they have to have a special election. So, again, Robert Byrd dead at the age of 92. I think we'll do this. We're going to take our second break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Supreme Court ruling, which has just been announced this morning, and also a little bit more about what's going on in Arizona with illegal immigration. Don't go away.
Honey, honey, you are my candy girl, and you got me wanting you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Good day, Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources. June 28, 2010. Gold opened this morning at $1,257. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1,290, $30, $645, $15 for a half ounce, or $322.58 for the quarter ounce. That's $1,290, $30, $645, $15, or $322.58.
Making the right decision is a challenge to investors. Are we going to see economic growth, slide into a recession, or worse, depression? Many investors are turning to gold as a common sense alternative to traditional paper investments. Midas has put together a powerful book titled 10 Reasons to Own Gold. Discussing costs, benefits, risks, the book is free and can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. Paper investments are dwarfed by gold's 6,000-year history. Discover how gold can be right for you and your IRA by calling 800-686-2237. Whether buying or it's time for you to sell, this book is free. Call 800-686-2237.
Hey, we're glad you're listening to Freedom Works. And if you like what you're hearing, there's something you can do to help keep us on the air. You can visit our website at thefreedomworks.com and make a contribution, anything from $20 on up, and it'll go directly to our program and our efforts to get out the libertarian message of less government in our lives and more personal freedom and responsibility. And while you're there at the website, you can find out more about libertarianism. You can also take a very short quiz to see where you fit in on the political spectrum. And you can find out more about people that have stood for libertarian principles like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand. But please consider backing our show with a contribution. We even make it easy for you with a credit or debit card. And once again, that's thefreedomworks.com. And by the way, thanks for listening.
Ruth Goodwin has flowers for all occasions at Open Air Florist, 607 North Myrtle in Clearwater. Open Air Florist has been Clearwater's premier flower shop for more than 35 years. Open Air Florist does weddings and parties. Call Ruth Goodwin now at Open Air Florist for all your floral needs and expressions. Gift baskets with wine are available at Open Air Florist. Call them now at 727-443-1963. 443-1963. Open Air Florist is now the official florist for the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Tampa Bay's 10 Talk. Entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. Thanks so much for being with us. And President Obama was up north over the weekend and at the G20 conference in Toronto. And yesterday he said he welcomed a commitment for the wealthy countries of the world to slash their deficits in half by 2013, despite earlier warnings against halting stimulus spending too quickly. Now, there's one for you. You know, don't stop your spending, governments, but let's figure out a way to slash our deficits at the same time. He says we cannot all rush to the exit at the same time. I don't know what he means by not all rushing to the exits at the same time, as if to say that, yeah, let's keep spending taxpayer money for a while. But he also issued a warning to North Korea, saying that its alleged sinking of a South Korean warship was what he called belligerent behavior that is unacceptable. And he said it is absolutely critical for the international community to rally behind South Koreans' president. He spoke to the G20 leaders of the 20 largest industrial countries, issuing a statement calling for advanced nations to cut their budget deficits as a part or proportion of gross domestic product growth, cut it in half within the next 3 years, and put their annual deficits on either a lower or more stable basis by year 2016. Why should anybody listen to him? Boy, you know, all they have to do is take a look at our country's national debt, which is approaching $14 trillion. He's the last guy to tell anybody how to run their country economically. Well, as we said, Elena Kagan sits down this morning. She's beginning the process as we speak of becoming the next Supreme Court justice to replace John Paul Stevens, who has retired officially now. And they're going to be probably someone along the way is going to ask her about her comment that the whole process of interviewing Supreme Court nominees has been vacuous over the years. They don't really get anything out of the nominees. It'll be interesting to see if she will venture forth information more so than other recent nominees have. But also, we talked a little bit about her stance on abortion and gun rights with Hans Bader from the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we also talked about the banning of the ROTC recruiters from the Harvard Law School when she was their dean. But she has not kept her silence on the ban on gays serving openly. In an email to students while she served as the Harvard dean of their law school, she said that that policy was a profound wrong, a moral injustice of the first order. And she got involved after an appeals court ruled unconstitutional the law that threatened the school's federal money if they did not allow military recruiters on campus. She enforced Harvard's policy by banning the military from using the on-campus recruiting office at the time. And so she was very much against the don't ask, don't tell, which, by the way, came about when she was serving under President Bill Clinton. Also on judicial activism, she once wrote that in Thurgood Marshall's view, and she served under Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American selected to the Supreme Court, she said that in his view, interpreting the Constitution, quote, demanded that the courts show a special solicitude for the despised and disadvantaged. Now, on the face of it, that sounds pretty good. take care of those that need help. But the truth is that that's a way of starting to undermine the underpinnings of the Constitution. Instead of interpreting law for what it is, based on a foundation found in the Constitution, you now take a look at the person and their circumstances, and you make a decision based on their particular circumstances. And that is the slippery slope. When asked by Senator Arlen Specter about whether the courts or the politicians should, quote, lead in creating a more just society, unquote, Kagan said, I think it's a great deal better for the elected branches to take the lead in creating a more just society than for the courts to do so. She said, I think a judge should try to the greatest extent possible to separate constitutional interpretation from his or her own values and beliefs. And in order to accomplish this result, the judge should look to constitutional text, history, structure, and precedent. Well, that sounds like a pretty good answer, actually. It sounds like she's going back to the Constitution there. Speaking about gun rights, we talked a little bit about how she actually wrote a memo when she was working for John Marshall, calling on him not to hear a man's appeal of his conviction for having an unlicensed gun. She said the defendant's sole contention is that the firearm statute violated his constitutional right to keep and bear arms. I'm not sympathetic. So that doesn't sound pro-gun. But she also said that there's no question the Second Amendment guarantees individuals the right to keep and bear arms. So she is kind of pro-gun there. Well, anyway, away we go. Now, the situation going on right now in Arizona, Senator John McCain appeared on Meet the Press, among some other programs, over the weekend, and talked a little bit about the statement by the governor of Arizona that most illegal immigrants are, quote, drug mules. In other words, people bringing drugs over when they cross. Senator McCain has disputed that. He does not agree with the governor's statement. And he did say, however, that Governor Jan Brewer is still doing a good job for her state and is on the right track. Well, you know, he started to slide a little bit away from his, I guess you could call it, more moderate or liberal position on the open borders. He's in that race for his life, I would tell you, to keep his Senate seat in November with a conservative running against him who comes out of the House. And I cannot think of his name now. It's J.D. Stallworth. And J.D. Stallworth, of course, has been much more conservative about closing the borders in Arizona. So McCain has started to slide a little bit more towards the conservative talking points on that one. But he goes on to say that I think there's a large number of illegal immigrants smuggling drugs, and I think the governor is right in that the drug cartels movement has dramatically increased. He says, I may not agree with one sentence that she uses about drug mules, but she's standing up for Arizona, and I think the people of my state deserve a better environment of security than the one they're getting from the federal government now. So McCain is, as I say, in the fight for his life, and he is backing the whole concept of closing those borders and backing that law in Arizona. Anyway, we're going to take a break. When we come back, are there more conservatives, moderates, or liberals out there? Well, we're going to tell you. Don't go away.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network. The legend of Krabby Bill Loader began on the northeast coastline of this great nation of ours more than 30 years ago. Seafood lovers couldn't wait to get their claws on Krabby Bill's fresh hand-picked crabs, oftentimes getting them right out of the back of his truck. In 1975, Krabby Bill picked up his wife and kids and moved to South Florida. Over the years, they opened several restaurants, each built around Krabby Bill's special love for fresh, no-frills, good-eating seafood. He was smart, too, and put one of his children or grandchildren in charge of each restaurant, making sure there's always a good bit of Krabby Bill around. We serve the biggest and best drinks on the beach and beyond. For starters, enjoy buffalo shrimp, fried gator, onion rings, baked oysters, clams, mussels, shrimp, and oysters, to name a few. Your favorite beach sandwich comes with complete with fries and coleslaw. Or enjoy yellowfin tuna, catfish, salmon, gulf grouper, bay scallops, stuffed flounder, mahi-mahi, lobster tails, and much, much more. Enjoy tummy-tempting combination platters also available at the Krabby Bill's on the roundabout on Clearwater Beach.
Hey, we're glad you're listening to Freedom Works. And if you like what you're hearing, there's something you can do to help keep us on the air. You can visit our website at thefreedomworks.com and make a contribution, anything from $20 on up, and it'll go directly to our program and our efforts to get out the libertarian message of less government in our lives and more personal freedom and responsibility. And while you're there at the website, you can find out more about libertarianism. You can also take a very short quiz to see where you fit in on the political spectrum. And you can find out more about people that have stood for libertarian principles like Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand. But please consider backing our show with a contribution. We even make it easy for you with a credit or debit card. And once again, that's thefreedomworks.com. And by the way, thanks for listening.
Starting Wednesday, June 30th, following Imus in the Morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, stay tuned for the Coach Cook American Real Estate Show with a Voice. We are looking forward to talking about the real estate issues that really matter today to every American homeowner and business in our ever-shifting U.S. of A real estate market. You can catch us anywhere in the world on the web at tantalk1340.com every Wednesday morning after Imus. And until then, this is Coach Cook, the USA Realtor with a Voice.
Tampa Bay's TAN Talk. Entertaining and informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. Gosh, so much going on. So much going on. But we got to talk some talk about whether or not this country is made up more of conservatives, liberals, or moderates, and who best to ask, or who better to ask than Gallup? Well, they've got the 2010 results. They were based on 8 Gallup and USA Today surveys conducted from January through June, and they interviewed more than 8,000 U.S. adults. And here are the surprising statistics. There are more conservatives, or people that call themselves conservatives, than any other group. 42% of Americans describe themselves as either very conservative or conservative. 20% call themselves liberal or very liberal. So more than twice as many people consider themselves conservatives than liberal. I'm trying to find where the moderates come in here. And that is that, let's see, it says here, the recent rise in conservatism follows a decline, which was seen after 2003. But liberalism has experienced the opposite. From 1993 to 2002, the ideological trend has been fairly stable, it says here, with roughly 40% identifying themselves as moderate and 38% as conservative. So at one time, moderates were at 40%, and I'm trying to see where they are now. And I can't see it on this particular. But we've got 42% conservative, so they are the highest now, and only 20% liberal. So it's it's interesting because you always think, well, there are more Democrats out there than Republicans. Well, maybe there are, but apparently there are more conservative Democrats than Republicans. Well, couple of stories here I got to talk about. This one really surprised me. I found this over the weekend. And this is in Oklahoma City. Police tasered an 86-year-old disabled grandma in her bed in the hospital and stepped on her oxygen hose until she could not breathe after her grandson called 911 seeking medical assistance. Now, though the grandson said, "Don't tase my granny," an El Reno police officer told another cop to taser her and wrote in his report that he did so because the old woman, quote, took a more aggressive posture in her bed. Now, there you go. Took a more aggressive posture in her bed. The grandson claims that he called 911 after he went to check on granny, who he found in her bed connected to a portable oxygen concentrator with a long hose. She's in marginal health, he said, and takes several prescribed medications daily. Unable to tell him exactly what she had taken, and was unable to tell him whether she had taken her meds or not. So he called 911 to ask for emergency help, get a technician over. He says as many as 10 El Reno police officers pushed their way through the door, and the grandma told them to get the hell out of her apartment. So instead, the apparent leader of the police, according to the defendant, instructed another cop to taser her. He stated in his report that the 86-year-old plaintiff took a more aggressive posture and that he was fearful for his safety and the safety of others. There you go, Big Ed. I knew you'd love this story. These guys are, you know, 10 or 11 cops in there, and they got to step on her oxygen and tase her while she's laying in bed, 86 years
old. Maybe she threatened to throw her urine sample or something at them, and they felt threatened, you know.
Unbelievable.
Flat on her back.
Unbelievable. To taser an old lady, I'm surprised at that age she didn't plan to, you know,
yeah,
die.
Really.
I mean, if you think about it, really. It's funny, but it's not so funny. We're going to have to follow this one and see where it goes in court. Unbelievable. By the way, the grandson seeking punitive damages. I don't blame him. Well, thank you very much for listening. Freedom Works. I am Paul Molloy. We'll join you again tomorrow morning. Have a good Monday, and bye for now.